Chapter 8. A Physics of Possibilities. Just when we think we have elementary particles pinned down, they seem to evade our grasp, turning into something else. To quote D.H. Lawrence, it's as if the atom were an impulsive thing always changing its mind. Until the moment it is observed, a quantum entity exists in a realm of potentiality, in what is called a state of superposition, where all possible quantum states coexist simultaneously. A state, interestingly enough, which has never been observed. The hallmark of an unobserved quantum entity is to hover in a ghostly ethereal state between the extremes of existence and non-existence, where it can be said to both exist and not exist at the same time, reminiscent of the aforementioned four-valued logic. This is to say it exists in all possible states, each one a parallel world, not fully occupying any possibility until the moment it is observed. The moment of observation is when, in Wheeler's words, an elementary quantum event takes place. It is the act of observation that forces nature to make up its mind and manifest itself in a specific state that we experience, thus becoming a determinate feature of our world. Heisenberg points out that the change in an object from potentiality to actuality always correlates with a change in our knowledge about the object. Being that consciousness is a vehicle through which we are able to attain knowledge, what Heisenberg is saying is that the change of potentiality into actuality necessarily involves a change in consciousness. Not existing in space-time, the appearance of the quantum realm in space-time at the moment of observation is a quantum event in which an atemporal process manifests itself in what appears to be time. In so doing, the quantum event helps to create the material basis upon which the illusory appearance of linear time is projected. Wheeler expresses the central point of quantum theory in a single, simple sentence when he says, "No elementary phenomenon is a phenomenon until it is an observed phenomenon." The necessity for this demarcation is the most mysterious feature of the quantum, for it holds the clue to the central principle of the construction of everything out of nothing. This tenet changes our traditional view that something has happened before we observe it. As Heisenberg writes, the term happens is restricted to the observation. At the moment of being observed, the wave function collapses in no time at all into a particular manifestation, while all of the other potentialities vaporize as if they had never existed. Due to an observation anywhere, the quantum entity's wave function instantaneously collapses everywhere. Not all of the infinite potentiality, however, is converted to actuality in a finite amount of time. To quote Wheeler, there are innumerable clouds of probability running around in the universe that have yet to trigger some registered event in the macroscopic world. I love Wheeler's image of innumerable clouds of probability running around the universe. From the quantum point of view, everything that might have happened influences what actually does happen. This has to do with Feynman's sum over history's idea, which points out that the particular event that actually takes place is the sum of all the virtual effects of what might have possibly happened. Using his typical baseball analogy, Wheeler comments, "It is as if a baseball pitcher, instead of throwing a single ball toward the batter, could launch simultaneously 1,000 balls that travel 1,000 different paths through space and time on their way to the batter. Each of these 1,000 baseballs has a history as it flies from the pitcher's mound to plate. What the batter sees and swings at is the result of all of these histories combined. A mind-bending idea, to be sure, but it's just what happens in the quantum world. In a quantum universe such as ours, everything ultimately exists in a state of open-ended potential, what Heisenberg calls transcendent potentia. Quantum theory implies that the whole universe, including ourselves, is recreated and recreating itself anew every moment based on observership. In other words, how we are dreaming it up. Once the seemingly infinite and open-ended world of quantum potentiality manifests in whatever particular and actual way it does due to being observed, we find ourselves, relatively speaking, in a very convincingly stable and seemingly classical universe. We subjectively experience the illusion that there is only one fixed and solid classical universe that exists, and everyone else, at least on the surface, appears to be living within the same world that we do. All of the potential, parallel, and unmanifested alternative universes seem to disappear as if they never existed. We are then like the proverbial horse with blinders limiting our vision, partitioning ourselves within and only seeing the one classical world we find ourselves inhabiting, with no awareness of the potential alternative universes existing all around, as well as inside of us. This is to say that at each and every moment there are a myriad of alternatives to choose from. To quote physicist Roger Penrose, "The behavior of the seemingly objective world that is actually perceived depends on how one's consciousness threads its way through the myriads of quantum superposed alternatives." Observation is the very act through which the quantum realm discloses itself. In quantum theory, the moment of observation is where physics gets personal and the rubber meets the road, which is to say, where abstract theory and empirical data meet and a specific actuality is realized and manifested out of a vast array of possibilities. It is important to note that we are always at the moment of observation, which is to say that we are there right now. There is no other moment but the one eternal moment of observation. The tendency to think that the moment of observation is just one single discrete moment in a linear sequence of other moments is due to the long ingrained habit of thinking in terms of linear sequential time, a linear time hangover. In our mind's role as observer participants, we are truly on the cutting edge of the Big Bang, itself a thoroughly quantum event, which billions of years later led to our appearance on the scene, wondering what original impetus led to our existence. We live on the forefront of the moment of creation that is always taking place in the moment, in the here and now. To quote Schrödinger, "For eternally and always, there is only now, one and the same now. The present is the only thing that has no end." In a similar vein, speaking about the nature of the mind, Schrödinger reminds us that it has a peculiar timetable, namely, mind is always now. There is really no before and after for the mind. This brings to mind philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein's statement, "If we take eternity to mean not infinite temporal duration, but timelessness, then eternal life belongs to those who live in the present." The fact that a new beginning appears every time we participate in the act of observation is an expression that the universe, of which we are a part, is always refreshing itself, and is thus perpetually creative at its most fundamental level. Quantum theory is revealing to us the creative nature of our moment-to-moment experience. It should get our highest attention that observing these quantum objects is the very act that brings them into existence. When we observe an atom to be someplace, quantum physics tells us that it is our looking that caused it to be there at the exact moment that we observed it. When a physicist observes an elementary particle, which from the quantum point of view causes the particle to exist, it is as if the physicist is dreaming up the quantum entity in the same way that a dreamer dreams up their own dreamscape. At the same time, if we let our creative imagination run wild, it is as if the elementary particle is reciprocally dreaming, as it dreams up the physicist to observe it and hence bestow upon it existence. The physicist and the subatomic particle are, in a timeless process that actually takes place in time, mutually dreaming each other up, indivisible aspects of one unified quantum field. Quantum theory reveals that there is nothing inherently solid or objectively real about the properties of an object that we measure. Before the advent of quantum physics, the hallmark of reality was its measurability. For something to attain the status of being real, it had to be able to be measured. Quantum physics has startled the physics community by seeing through and dissolving this long-held and cherished notion. It is revealing that we ourselves are intimately involved in producing the results of our own measurements. Our discovery of a quantum entity in a very real sense causes it to be there, which implies that there is no physically real world independent of our observation of it. Before these entities are observed, they don't really exist. There is nothing we can say about them. They are unspeakable. Wheeler sometimes used a baseball analogy to illustrate the nature of quantum reality. Talking about how they call balls and strikes, some umpires say, "I call them the way I see them," which is an expression of the subjective, projective nature of our perception. A second umpire might say, "I call them the way they are," which is an expression of there being an objectively existing reality not dependent on observation, which was Einstein's point of view. Wheeler then quotes a quantum umpire who would say, "They ain't nothing till I call them," which is an expression of a quantum baseball game in which nothing exists until it is observed. The properties of quantum objects aren't inherent to the object, but instead emerge from and are created by interactions with their environment, as well as their relationship to observers and their inescapably creative acts of observation. We can use light as an example. It is well known that light displays either wave-like or particle-like qualities depending upon the experimental setup and how it is observed. These two conditions can never appear simultaneously, however. To ask whether light is a wave or a particle is a meaningless question. According to quantum physics, there is no way of knowing what light really is. To be more accurate, the wave-like or particle-like behavior that we observe in light is not a property of light per se. It is a property of our interaction with light. If, as quantum physics attests, there is no independent external objective reality, then light, be it in its wave-like or particle-like aspect, cannot be said to exist separate from our interaction with it. In other words, we cannot talk about the properties of light without including ourselves in the equation. What we are saying about light is true of everything. What we experience is not external reality, but our interaction with what our minds construe to be an external reality. It can't be repeated often enough. Our observing psyche is an integral part of the process being observed. The fact that the properties of these quantum objects are a function of our observation, and that there is no substance, no separately existing intrinsic quantum object separate from its properties, is an expression of these quantum objects having no independently existing objective reality. They are not real in the way we commonly think of something being real. And yet, we ourselves, as well as the experimental instruments physicists are using to measure these not real quantum objects, are made up of a conglomeration of the same quantum stuff that itself isn't real in the ordinary sense. The revelations of quantum physics put us into a very unusual situation. Everything we call real is composed of things that themselves cannot be regarded as real. Quantum physics points out that mass is not an inherent property or primary quality of the ultimate building blocks of nature. According to quantum theory, there is in fact no such thing as mass. The appearance of mass is constructed entirely from the energetic interactions between massless, insubstantial, and phantom-like elementary particles, which themselves are the result of interactions between immaterial, information-filled quantum fields of potential. To quote pre-Socratic Greek philosopher Heraclitus, latent structure is matter of obvious structure. To put a slightly different spin on our contemplation, how can abstract quantum entities generate physical events? It is only possible to answer this question if we recognize a dimension that is part of the cosmos, but is not in the dimension of space-time, being somehow beyond it. Light is made out of photons, which have what Banesh Hoffman calls their flighty propensity of jumping into and out of existence. Photons, to quote Hoffman, were mere will-o'-the-wisps, evanescent and insubstantial. They were free to come and go, to come out of nothingness and return to nothingness, to materialize as radiant, lustrous wavicles and melt away again. They could multiply like rabbits. You could never be sure how many you had. You might even start with none at all, and suddenly find yourself overwhelmed by them. In an instant, there appears a stupendous plenitude of photons, a dazzling flash of light where previously all was darkness. The massless, intangible, and immaterial photon, which has zero weight, somehow gives rise to the massive weight of the whole material universe. The question naturally arises, how does the universe precipitate out of a field of pure light? For example, massless photons are routinely observed becoming electrons, which have mass, if they interact in a specific way. This remarkable phenomena of mass spontaneously appearing out of massless light and then dematerializing back into light seems to indicate that mass is not as substantial as it seems, and may be more of an appearance arising in the theater of space and time than a solid reality. Simply put, there aren't any nuts and bolts, that is, fixed attributes at the quantum level. We can't visualize the quantum world, not because we know too little, but because we know too much. To quote Heisenberg, if we think we can picture what is going on in the quantum domain, that is one indication that we've got it wrong. If we insist on making an image to represent the quantum realm, It is, to quote Sir James Jeans, like making a graven image of a spirit. Instead of an icon, our image will then be an idol. The logos will have turned into a logo. Though impossible to visualize, the quantum realm is not impossible to think about. We just have to learn to think in completely new, quantum-compatible ways. Though beyond our conventional imagination, it is certainly not beyond nature's imagination, which is where our biological existence, wherein our human imagination is rooted, ultimately springs. Nature has no trouble producing such quantum entities. Indeed, such entities are what this whole wide world, including ourselves, is made of. The universe's appearance is deceptive. The universe appears in one way, but exists in another. Buddhism distinguishes between the absolute or ultimate mode of reality, the way things really are, to the relative, conventional, or seeming mode of reality, the way things appear. Behind the apparent solidity of everyday objects lies a world of open-ended potentiality. In order to more fully understand conventional reality, we must take into account other dimensions of a deeper reality. There is a non-physical higher dimension that is not located in space-time, in which our world of space-time is contained, a dimension which we must factor into our equations of what constitutes reality. In other words, nature, and our nature, is not contained solely in space-time. Wheeler writes, "Every item of the physical world has at bottom, a very deep bottom in most instances, an immaterial source and explanation." This idea bears repeating. All of the materialized universe arises out of something, a something which is akin to nothing, that is immaterial and mind-like in nature. To quote Wheeler, "We go down and down from crystal to molecule, from molecule to atom, from atom to nucleus, from nucleus to particle, and there's still something beyond both geometry and particle. In the end, we have to come back to mind. When we get down to it, we get down to mind." Along similar lines, regarding physics' attempt to penetrate to the innermost center of things, Heisenberg writes, "I cannot regret that this center is not material, that it has to do rather with the ideas than with their material images." In other words, the human endeavor to access the deep fundamental structure of nature, the very heart of matter, has resulted not in finding anything material, but rather has led to the subjective and immaterial realm of ideas. Physics has penetrated to the very core of material, seemingly objective reality, and has found nothing that can be said to ultimately exist beyond or outside of our observation of it. It is as if objective reality has slipped beyond our grasp, beyond concepts, beyond even the concept of existence and non-existence. To quote Eddington, "We have found a strange footprint on the shores of the unknown. We have devised profound theories one after another to account for its origins. At last, we have succeeded in reconstructing the creature that made the footprint, and lo, it is our own." When we peer into the deepest recesses of matter, or to the farthest edge of the universe, we see nothing but our own puzzled faces staring back at us. Exploring the farthest reaches of the outside world brings us right back to our inner selves. Russian philosopher Nikolai Berdyaev writes, "All attempts at external perception of the world, without immersion in the depths of man, have produced only a knowledge of the surface of things. If one proceeds from man outward, one can never reach the meaning of things, since the solution of the riddle of meaning is hidden within man himself." We can never speak about nature without at the same time speaking about ourselves. There is a paradox at the heart of reality, as if at the heart of everything, the answer to the riddle of life is a question, not an answer. Poetically expressing the same realization, Wheeler asks the question, "What is out there? 'Tis ourselves?"